Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Academy Award winner Gary Oldman leads a group of spies out to get out, far out, from the cold in Slow Horses. This new Apple TV Plus scripted adventure is winning plaudits for its cast, led by Oldman, and director executive producer James Hawes. He will join me next in an internet radio exclusive. Also in earshot, Warner Brothers Discovery's Birth, Disney Plus grabs Dancing with the Stars. I'm not kidding, we'll give you the story on that. Is a Crown prequel in the cards? Our classic trivia question, and get ready for the takeaways of the week on Parade. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and presented on Amazon Music, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Verbal Reason, and Spotify. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to all the good stuff whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy to have you aboard on this Friday afternoon for the program all about TV's current and future. 59 degrees at the top of the hour. I have a wonderful guest for you live from London in the hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. What you have to do for some interaction, make a call and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. We've got a chat room business. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, is already in the room. And you can join him right now. It's SimonApple04 is the chat room number, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Use the phone or the room either way. You get to interact with our guests and yours truly. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions on Disney Live with you. James Hawes, the director and executive producer of Apple TV Plus's critically acclaimed spy saga, Slow Horses, will join me live from London after these news notes. At any moment, the era of Warner Media, AT&T division, will end, and the era of Warner Brothers Discovery, out of a marriage with Discovery, Inc., will begin. Earlier today, AT&T chief executive John Stankey issued a farewell memo to Warner Media employees, thanking them for their accomplishments under AT&T the last 4 years and wishing them the best at their new enterprise. I quote, "Over time," Stankey's memo details in part, "the combination of Warner Media and Discovery forged a stronger company and quickened the already strong pace of innovation and change you established," unquote. In other development today, Discovery executive John Steinlauf will serve as chief United States advertising sales officer of the merged company. Again, the merger is expected to be finalized at any moment. After 16 years on ABC, Dancing with the Stars will leap over to Disney Plus this fall. It will also be the first live series of the mega content service. What prompted the move? Plans for ABC to simulcast several ESPN Monday Night Football games this fall, plus get one ABC exclusive contest. BBC Studios will continue as Dancing's producer and will continue to originate live from Los Angeles. May we have a prequel to The Crown, please? That's the question Netflix is posing to Left Bank Pictures, makers of the uber-popular award-winning drama series. Prequel talks between the parties are going on, and that's all for now, according to a Variety report. It's believed the idea is to dramatize British royalty from 1901 to 1947, with Crown creator Peter Morgan as main writer and the series running from 3 to 5 seasons. As for The Crown itself, Netflix has 2 more rounds to go. Season 5 set to premiere late fall, and Season 6 for 2023, with filming on track to start in London this August. Now, quickies, rom-com series With Love will get a second Amazon season, while Bravo's popular Shaws of Sunset is gone for good after 9 years. EarthX Network's annual film festival will be in person from Dallas, May 12th to 15th. EarthX is the network on smart TV sets and smart devices devoted to all things environment that we featured on this program several months ago. And Tiger Woods has started his second round of the Masters Golf Tournament as of 2:45 p.m. Eastern Time. Woods was at the third hole at even par, 4 shots behind the leaders. The projected cut line right now, 3 over par. And that is news notes for today. In the mid-1960s, Richard Burton gave one of his best performances ever in The Spy Who Came In from the Cold, a wonderful thriller based on the best-selling novel by one of the masters of the genre, John le Carré. Well, here we are in April, and now Apple TV Plus is presenting what you might say is the group that is trying to go out from the cold called Slow Horses. It's getting rave reviews for its wonderful cast and its production values. The cast headed by Academy Award winner Gary Oldman, who of course played the wonderful role of Winston Churchill in the award-winning movie Darkest Hour. He's joined, by the way, by a number of other Academy Award people, both nominees and Jonathan Pryce. And that's just some of the great cast. Joining us live from London in Interview Exclusive, the director and executive producer of the series, James Hawes. James, welcome in.
It's very nice to be here, Simon. Hi.
And it's great to have you. Well, you've had a week to see what has been happening with your series and how it's being enjoyed worldwide. What are you getting from the feedback? What kind of feedback are you getting about your show?
Feedback is amazing. People have completely understood the show, and anybody who's seen it realizes it's a particular tone. By movies,
and what
by
kind of
series.
What kind of tone would you describe it as?
Well, look, it's classic British spy genre, but there's a big, dark vein of black humor running all the way through it. And that's quite a challenge for a director to bring that combination living side by side.
What do you think of some people, some critics, calling it a spy dramedy?
I haven't come across that, to be honest. I don't think that's right. I'm going to differ with those critics. I think the thriller, look, the guns are loaded, people bleed, people die. I think there's plenty of drama. What there is character humor. So there's laugh-out-loud moments that come more from the characters than the situation. And these are the screw-ups of the spy world. These are the guys who've been sent away to the gulag of MI5. They're the people who are desperately trying to earn their way back into the sunshine with very little hope of actually getting there. And so what we laugh at is their attempt to try and get back while they try at the same time to solve some major terrorist threat or whatever. So I think there's more drama than comedy. I think the comedy gives it a little light touch along the way.
And James, it seems that that's what some of the critics are pointing to, is that they really enjoy the fact that this is a show that has those touches of satire, those touches of humor, that it rounds out all these characters who are all trying to get themselves back into the spy game, if you would, get themselves back into good graces.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the series has at its roots this series of novels by Nick Herring. So there's a fantastic wealth of developed characters with all their lairs, with all their private histories for the writing team to feed on. And they've done that, I think, brilliantly. And then we're spoiled with this ensemble casting that really are right up there the cream of British performers. And I think that combination of having the material to lean back on, these rather brilliant cracking scripts, and then a cast to make it come alive is really playing well. And that's what the critics are picking up on. It's fun. It's fun. You get to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like to work with Gary Oldman, somebody who we've seen his career blossom in so many expected but also many unexpected ways, as he did in Darkest Hour, winning the Oscar for that role?
Totally did. I mean, he is one of the greatest actors of his generation. There's no doubt. You know, when you tell people that Gary is at the heart of the ensemble, that's part of the draw for the other cast. That's part of the thrill for a director like me. He earned his spurs in what you would call off-Broadway theater. He knows his craft. He says some great things like, James, it's not how well you know the script, it's how long you know it. He likes to live with the words. He likes to live with the character. For me, what's great is he is a collaborator. He comes on set. He has an idea of how the character is going to be, how the thing is going to play. But he's really excited to invent, to feed off the other cast around him, to be challenged by some of the questions put to him. And that was thrilling. You know, sometimes we just let the camera run. We went for additional takes. He'd say, just, James, give me a couple more. Just let's see how it runs back to back without all the technical stuff. Or let's just try it a different way. So there was a real sense of it being quite organic as we found our way into the character and then to find the pitch, you know, just how the laughs and the drama sat side by side.
When it comes to drama dealing with espionage, spies or heroes who have a sort of different je ne sais quoi about them, it seems that British producers, writers, creators, directors seem to have it better than anybody else how to do this genre. I mentioned Richard Burton, who gave that wonderful performance, which was an Oscar-nominated performance in The Spy Who Came In From the Cold. You look at British TV shows like MI5, which had a run here in the States way back when on A&E. Why do you think there is such a standard of excellence that's being set in this particular kind of television or this particular kind of film?
I think it's in our DNA. I mean, I think the genre grew up here with Ian Fleming, who wrote Bond, with Len Deighton, who wrote Bourne. And then, of course, we talked earlier about John le Carré. So there's something that we've learned and produced in our industry and in our culture here. The British make very good spies. We may not be quite the global power we always like to think we were, but we're still very good at playing the geopolitics behind the scenes, in the back alleys, under the train arches. And I think it's just something we embrace. We're good at the cloak and dagger stuff. We lent it to the States for a while. You guys did the 1970s and 1980s with All the President's Men, with 3 Days of a Condor and A Parallax View. You evolved it into these conspiracy thrillers. And I think we're now having our moment of borrowing it back again. It's not all about James Bond. In many ways, Jackson Lamb is the polar opposite of James Bond. If Bond is the gentleman spy, this one's the hobo version.
But something else too, James, is that when you watch, whether it's British films or British television, that spies come in all sorts of colors. I should have also mentioned Alec Guinness as George Smiley in Le Carré's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which was a miniseries here, and which did very, very well, and I then won him the Emmy Award. And I should point out one of my favorite people, my favorite actors, I met twice in the course of covering television, Edward Woodward, The Equalizer, did Callan, which was a very unusual spy counter spy tale. It just seems that another thing is that spies come in all different shapes, all different sizes, all different moods. So when you approach Slow Horses as a director, how does that impact how you deal with the material?
Well, look, I think, again, I'm going to talk about character, which is at the base of all our drama. All these individuals we're talking about are, to some extent, to be a spy, you need to be a little bit of an outsider. You have to have a little bit of ice in your heart. You have to be a little bit damaged. Well, that stuff makes for fantastic character drama. We want to see the flaws. We want to see what happens when people are put under pressure. And, of course, we need to remember that Gary Oldman also played Smiley in Tinker Tailor. So, you know, he has a bit of a track record in the genre already. And what was fascinating for him was to come and reinvestigate the space, but with a completely different tone and a different character.
We're speaking with James Hawes. He is the director and executive producer of the critically acclaimed new Apple TV Plus series, Slow Horses, which is now in its second week. Episode 3 is now playing. The first 2 episodes ran a week ago. The 3rd episode is now playing on Apple TV Plus, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over. James joins us live from London this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And we're happy you're joining us, too, on this Friday afternoon, wherever you are. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. 60 degrees right now at the very moment here in the Big Apple. And we want to hear from you, so make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, already in the room. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll hear from an entrepreneur who is trying to diversify the kinds of networks that African Americans are not only running, but owning. The company is called Urban Edge Networks. The entrepreneur is Todd Brown, and you will meet him right here Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised. He's currently aboard with a very popular project called HBCU League Pass. It's a League Pass concept for historically black college universities. He's also trying to get Grambling College, very famous HBCU, to do its own television network. And that's just the start of the kind of impact he wants to make on the two. Todd Brown from Urban Edge Networks, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. He's our lead guest right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. James, what's it like not only to have Gary Oldman in your crew, but people like Jonathan Pryce, a magnificent actor in so many different ways, with a great gallery of credits, and Kristen Cott Thomas, who also was Academy Award nomination, and she's had a wonderful career.
Look, it's a thrill. There's no doubt. These are, for a director, these are pinch-yourself moments. And there were many in the making of Slow Horses. But you know that it's about showing them respect, understanding where they've come from, having a clear view of what you want to get out of the show, and then letting them lead you as much as you lead them. It really is a collaborative process. I've said it a few times. I think it's one of the strengths behind this show.
What was it like to do episode by episode? How do you develop the material, you know, starting from episode 1 to 6 episodes overall? And you got a second season. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But how do you, as a director, on the fly, develop the material, develop the camaraderie with this group of spies who want to, again, be out from the cold and really make the material the best it can be on a production schedule?
Well, production should, it's the practicalities. You're putting your finger on it right away. Obviously, we don't shoot things in story order. It's, life is never that simple. So in this case, obviously, there's a considerable amount of time spent in rehearsal where you really dissect the characters, the backstories, what are the relationships, and what does Jackson Lamb think about Diana Taverner? You know, what does Gary Oldman think about Kristin Scott Thomas within the piece? What we did do was we did all the scenes for the entire show that take place in Slough House, so in the offices, we like to think of it as being the Adams family mansion for our dysfunctional family of spies. So that gave us one whole through line, a story arc for all the characters and for the narrative, the whole six episodes. And that gave us a way to have a kind of a map of character arcs and emotions for them to play on. Because after that, of course, production demands are such that you may be going off to an episode two or a scene from episode five, straight back to episode two again. On any given day, you have to be led by the practicalities. Mm-hmm. And I haven't even talked about the pandemic, of course. We were filming all this through the pandemic.
Yeah. By the way, what was it like to work with Will Smith, who wrote the series? He's best known here in the United States for Veep, which had a great run on HBO.
Yeah, and what a great show. I mean, it's, that show is such fun. Will was my sidekick throughout. You know, we were the buddy movie all in our own right. He taught me things, I taught him things. When we had problems, for instance, if we lost a location or if an actor asked a really brilliant question that exposed something we hadn't thought about before, we would brainstorm it on the edge of set. We were turning pages way before the cast arrived so that we knew the story better than anybody else. So it was dynamic. We were inventing things as we went, and it was a privilege to be allowed to do that. That's one of the things about working with a company like Seesaw and a company like Apple. They enable you as the key creators to be letting the show find its own way to the screen and not necessarily be controlled too much from outside.
For those who have not seen the series yet, how do or why do this group of spies, these dysfunctional characters, find themselves in the same place and having Oldman emerge as their leader?
Okay, well, it's backstories. These are the screw-ups, as I touched on earlier. So these are the spies, and of course this has really happened. These are the spies who left the top secret file on the train. These are the spies who kicked down the wrong door or who slept with the ambassador's wife when they really shouldn't have done. And they've been sent into a gulag, an exile, and it's the naughty step. Now, Gary Oldman has dreamt up this place, or his character has dreamt up this place. He is a veteran of the Cold War. There are things that will be revealed as a dark backstory, but there are reasons why he's wanted to be in this space. Nobody knows quite what they are. That's part of the mystery within the series. And so his job there is to just handle these poor spooks who want to do their, who want to earn their way back into the sunshine. But it's the drudge jobs, and if there are off book jobs, they get to do it. So that if it goes wrong, they take the fall, and none of the shiny spies get hit by any of the collateral damage.
How did you find yourself in the position to direct this series? Tell us the James Haw story in terms of getting into the world of TV directing and then getting this assignment.
Well, that goes back a long way. I grew up wanting to be a director without really knowing what it was, but I understood it was world building and telling stories, and that looked kind of cool. I started in fringe theatre. I worked in the BBC doing documentaries and news early on, as did quite a lot of the directors you probably know of better than me. It was a really good tradition. The BBC has been a fantastic place of learning and training for people telling screen stories of all types. And then you gradually earn your way through dramas. I've done shows like Black Mirror that people may know there, Alienist, Snowpiercer. I set up Snowpiercer for HBO Max. And then I got a call from people I'd worked with previously at Seesaw, and they send me the scripts, and they say, hi, there's the material. What's your response? Is this something you'd be interested in talking about? And then it's about a director going in with a pitch, with a take, and seeing if that chimes with the producers and the writers about the sort of show they're all imagining, so that I don't want to turn it into something that is completely different to what everybody's expecting to see. And that's what happened. That's what happened. And then I'm unleashed. I'm able to go and play and create.
Slow Horses, the program that we are talking about, with a cast led by Academy Award winner Gary Oldman, now in its first season on Apple TV+, second week starting today, and is set for a second season. We'll talk about that more in a moment. With James Hawes, the program's director and executive producer. He's with us live from London this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom, I'm with you from the other side of the Atlantic, New York, 60 degrees at the moment. If a question or comment in our many minutes with James, make a call and make it work, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up in our next half hour, our classic trivia question of the week, three prizes in play for you if you're first with the correct answer. And then an expanded version of our takeaway of the week segment. Normally we focus on one development that could impact how you watch and use television down the road, but this has been a very interesting week so far, and we have a little bit to go. So we have a bunch of takeaways on parade, and I'd love to hear from you what you think should be the takeaway winner. So that's coming up in our next half hour. James, where are you at in terms of season two?
Season two is in the can. Season two was shot by another director, back-to-back with the first season that you know about. And it's in the process, and it'll be coming to you later this year.
All righty, and we're not going to wait till later to take this call. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, Red, good to have you. You're on the line with James Hawes from Slow Horses. Go right ahead.
Hey, James. I haven't seen the whole show yet. I've only seen the trailer so far, and I have kind of a nerdy production question for you. In the trailer, some of it looked anamorphic, and some of it looked like it was filmed like with spherical lenses. So I'm wondering if that's true. And if there's something like in the production Bible or something of when you use anamorphics versus sphericals and just that production nerdy kind of stuff.
Hi, Rick. Nice to talk to you. I wish I had my director of photography to give you a fuller answer. It was a little bit of a mix. You're quite right. We wanted to evoke something of the grungy era, and you may be feeling that it's there in the color palette as well as in the sharpness of the production design and the way we shot it. You may even notice, if you're looking at the technical side of things, the way we move the camera, the way we frame it, it's got a sort of slightly broken frame, paranoid feel, hiding behind the furniture in Slough House. It gets rather more open and shiny and spherical when we go off to the park, to MI5 proper.
Excellent. So yeah, I noticed that. Yes, it absolutely does. I wasn't sure whether it was true or not, but I saw that, and that's very cool. So I'm definitely going to be watching the show and checking it out. And it looks great, and the script looks great too. So definitely going to watch the series. Absolutely. Thank you, Simon.
Great. Thank you, Rick.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Rich. Thank you for the question. And by the way, stay tuned for the second half hour. I'd love to get back with you on the line and get your thoughts about our takeaways of the week nominees. So please call in during the second half hour. I'd love to get your thoughts on it, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Simon. Bye.
You're welcome, Rich. Take care. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Hopefully we'll have him back in the second half hour. Something else about Slow Horses for you, James, is that you not only have a great diverse cast in front of the camera, but you are working with some very top-notch executive producers alongside. You got Graham Yost, wonderful track record here in the United States with Justified and many other top-quality shows. You got Gail Muttrich. You've got Ian Canning, who's done some terrific work. What's it like to blend in with this set of, we're talking top-of-the-line EPs?
I do it very proudly. Listen, there are challenging conversations. I'm not going to tell you that everything was sweetness and light and we sat down there in a very British way and chinked cups of tea. There were some animated conversations, and I think that's entirely healthy. It was excitable a lot of the time. We knew the show we wanted to make, but when you have those kinds of brains around, you want to be challenged. And people did. And I think for all of us now to come the other side of it, obviously it's been a huge couple of weeks for, you mentioned Ian Canning, for example, with Cecil Films, who produced Power of the Dog, which obviously won the BAFTA, and director won the Academy Award. So that and the launch of Slow Horses tells you something of the caliber of the team that's behind this show. Graham Yost would come in and ask some really searching questions of us and make sure we were being demanding enough of the script and making sure that there were places where we weren't just being too British, that this was going to be understood wherever it went globally. And of course, Gail has a tremendous track record as well. So for me, to have that experience behind me is enormously reassuring and supportive in all ways. You want to be told, hey, James, this is great, and you want to be asked, James, are you sure? And both those things are good. I always said to them, look, beat up on me. Be tough on me now on the set while we're shooting it, while we have a chance to put it right. Because when I'm then sat in Soho, in the edit suite, looking at everything that I've got to play with, my coffee is going to taste that much better that we got it right when we were shooting, rather than wishing I'd done it differently on the day.
So, James, where do you go next in your TV directing career? What's coming up?
The answer is not TV. Strangely enough, and I can't tell you everything because it's not completely nailed down. I'm probably shooting a movie next, which will be the first theatrical movie I've done. So I think that's what's interesting about that is the blend between, let's call it the small screen and the big screen, is so blurred these days that the traffic of screen talent and behind the screen, behind the camera talent is far more fluid than it was even just 5-10 years ago. The ambition of the stories on the small screen attract a lot of talent that would traditionally only have worked on the big screen, and vice versa. If you can prove your ability as a storyteller on the small screen, then the transition is that much easier. And obviously one of the things we did with Slow Horses was try and give it some big screen ambition when the story demanded.
The program is Slow Horses, episodes 2 and 3, 1, 2, 3, now available, more to come, 3 more to go, and then another season after that on Apple TV+, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. And for more details about the program online, you can go to apple.com/TV. That's apple.com/TV. Slow Horses, great cast led by Academy Award winner Gary Oldman, now playing on Apple TV+. First 3 episodes now available, and hopefully many, many more to come. James Hawes, thank you very much for coming on. Congratulations on your work on the first season, and hopefully the series has many more seasons to come, and I hope that your career continues in movies and in film. It's been a pleasure to have you aboard.
It's been a great pleasure to be here. Thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome, James. Anytime. Take care and have a fantastic weekend.
And you. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you.
James Hawes, the director and executive producer of Slow Horses on Apple TV+, joining us live from London. More tomorrow will be televised coming away, but first, some words to the fine folks at Audible.com. Are you looking for an audiobook that can give you new direction in life, that can deal with what you're dealing with? Well, there's a new book by a man named Brené Brown. It's called Atlas of the Heart. And in this audiobook, he has come up with a whole bunch of thoughts about what makes you tick, what makes you don't tick, and how you can tick greater when you pay attention to them. It's called Atlas of the Heart, and you can get it right now with a trial run, a month trial run, at Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration, with over 250,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get 1 free audiobook, that 1 month trial, great customer service from the fine folks at Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while the supply lasts, important health and wellness information. Plus, if you're an Amazon Prime member already, 2 audiobooks come your way in the trial, one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions, podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, regional theater, one woman, one man shows, and a whole lot more. So how about making today the day you discover how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world? It's a great gift for you or someone you love, and all it takes is to go to audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, classic trivia question of the week and our special takeaways of the week on Parade. Plenty of things happened this week, and they're all nominees. We'll get to that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogsofparade.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you want the latest on the Masters, keep your fingers crossed, Tiger makes the cut. Check out Post Time with the Greek, now on Blog Talk Radio, both days of the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. I'm sure you'll have a lot to say about the NBA action and the upcoming playoffs. Major League Baseball is getting back in action. Yankees are playing today. Mets played last night. They won their game, by the way. So check out Post Time with the Greek, Saturday and Sunday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget Best Be Charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon, the 8th of April, 2022. It's 60 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Happy to have you aboard wherever you may listen to us on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker to the Radio. It's time to have a movie live from New York. And coming up, an extended version of our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, because so much has been happening all week long. We wanted to see what is popping, and also want to hear what you think about our nominees, too. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First, classic trivia question of the week. Third time this week, we are offering the question, and if you're first with the correct answer, you will win the new Nailed It cookbook from the fine folks at Netflix. We have got the 20th anniversary DVD of 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir. This is the special that we talked about on our show last December, presented on BYU TV and PBS with bonus material as well, and the 25th anniversary Blues Blues Notepad, courtesy of Nickelodeon. And here's the question. What 1970s television series had two Academy Award-winning actors play the same role? What 1970s television series had two, not one, two Academy Award-winning actors play the same role? And here's a hint. You can see both of those actors in that role on YouTube. One more time. What 1970s television series had two Academy Award-winning actors play the same role? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your mailing address. If you first get the answer, you win, and we'll get the prize out to you as soon as possible. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter in the morning hours. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, you don't win unless you're in, so do so. We'll see if we can, by the way, give you one more shot at the question before we leave you today at the top of the hour. So get in the game today, folks. And, of course, all the very best. Now time for our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week. Usually, we highlight one development that took place during this week that we think you should take away from as being very impactful on the future of television, what you watch or how you use television. This week, however, we have so many developments that have popped up and some that still may be popping that there really isn't one, at least for me, takeaway of the week. So instead, we're going to present them to you, a nice little parade of, let's say, four or five takeaways of the week. And I'd love to hear from you. What do you think would be the takeaway of the week, the best among them? So give us a call, 646-652-2906. We'll use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name, and Rick Webb, if you're still with us, and I know you're still in the chat room, give us a call during the half hour. I'd love to hear what you have to say about these various trends. So here are our takeaways of the week on parade. First up, Warner Brothers Discovery. Yes, we are any minute away from WarnerMedia becoming Warner Brothers Discovery. David Zaslav, the head of Discovery, has already announced his management team. He just filled another role in earlier today. If you missed our news notes, John Steinlauf, who I've known for years, one of the best ad sales executives in the business. He is now going to be chief ad sales executive for the United States. And I can tell you this, knowing David for a long time, you get the sense that Zaslav is coming in blazing with what he wants to do with Warner Brothers Discovery. In all the interviews he has given, you get the sense that he wants to really tap Warner Brothers and make it even a bigger player, not only in terms of serving all the services that will be in this profile, 40 services, from HBO Max to TBS, TNT, Open Free Network, Food Network, et cetera, with both scripted and unscripted television, but also to keep Warner Brothers going as a player supplying content, original content, elsewhere, like with the CW, like CBS, like ABC and Disney and so on and so forth. I think Warner Bros. Discovery is going to be one whale of a merger, and it's going to be fun for the rest of this year to see how this develops, especially with the team of people they've got in place. To everyone's credit, Shannon Duguay is staying aboard as president of Warner Bros. Television Group. Casey Bloy is staying at HBO and HBO Max. Under his leadership, HBO has gone to another level. Look at what's happened already this year. With shows on HBO like Somebody Somewhere, which I think is going to be up for some Emmy Awards later this year, certainly for its lead actress. Euphoria's had a great second season. The Gilded Age from Downton Abbey's creator, off to a great start, up for a second season. Gentleman Jack coming back, wonderful English show that we had Sally Wainwright, the creator, on a number of years ago. Second season is finally going to be running later this month on HBO. And Winning Time, if you haven't heard, the L.A. Lakers Dynasty series, that's coming back for a second season. It's doing very, very well. Over a million people saw the finale this past Sunday. And when you have the catalog of services that Discovery and Warner Media, as Warner Bros. Discovery, bring to the table together, it is going to be both a scripted and unscripted powerhouse. And I have a hunch, I mentioned this a couple of months ago, I really believe that before the year is out, Warner Brothers will finally get around to doing a Harry Potter scripted series. They're going to do it. You just get a sense that that is going to be a big mandate for David Zaslav and that executive team. Warner Brothers has franchised up the wazoo. Of course, one of the best animation studios around, and they're going to be running on full blast, too, with Cartoon Network and with all the Cartoonista and all the other things they're doing. It's going to be one amazing, amazing situation. I cannot see how this is not a slam dunk. So Warner Bros. Discovery, finally married. Probably by the end of today, takeaway of the week, number one. Takeaway week number two, where the people who are leaving Warner Media before this marriage finally completes, where are they going to go? Where is Jason Kilar, who has been heading Warner Brothers, Warner Media the last 2 years, where is he going to go? Where is Toby Emmerich, the where is Andy Pascal, the current head of HBO Max? Where is he going to go? Where is Dan Sarnoff, the former head of Warner Brothers? Where is she going to go? We're talking about super free agents, and it's going to be fun over the next few months to see where they end up. You may have seen some of the exit interviews, as we like to say in the business, that Jason Kilar has given with the likes of Deadline, Hollywood Daily, The Hollywood Reporter, and Variety. And to all three of those people, he has said this: I'm not leaving this entertainment medium forever. I'm ready for my next act, and don't know what it's going to be. I'll let you know when I get it. So if you're a company that wants to be bigger in the business, or if you're a company that's starting out in the business, you want a great leader, as Jason Kilar proved with Hulu before he signed up with Warner Media, you know you're going to get somebody who wants to be very innovative, sometimes controversially, but I think that he and Ann Sarnoff and Andy Pascal are going to end up just fine. And if there are very new players in the house, you might want to give them a call. You might end up in a very lucky position with any one of them. Takeaway of the week number two. Takeaway of the week number three. There has been a blitz of new programming announcements from Apple TV+. Of course, we just had James Hawes from Slow Horses, which is off to the races. And you get the sense more and more that Apple TV+ is on an amazing roll. It seems they cannot do no wrong with their original series. Already this year, they've had Severance, which just got a second season, the Ben Stiller series. Pachinko, marvelous new series. I think it's going to be up for a lot of Emmy Awards this year, and maybe in Best Drama, and maybe a Peabody Award next year. That is going to go probably to a second season. Slow Horses is getting a second season of the belt, which will be on Apple TV Plus later this year. And Fraggle Rock, which we had the executive producer on back in January, that's doing well. They have a lot of people working on shows for them. They are looking really, really excellent. And coming up later this year, they've got a third season of The Morning Show, second seasons of Foundation and Invasion. They've got Tehran coming back for a second season in about a month. They are really going bonkers with original television. It looks like the folks at Apple have finally realized, you know what? Our strategy of doing all original shows is finally landing. Quality is coming off great Emmy and Peabody Awards for shows like Ted Lasso and other such programs, and it is getting a worldwide following. No matter what people say, you get a hunch that Apple TV Plus is in for the long haul, and that's why they're stepping up the pace with original series, particularly scripted series and miniseries. And I hope along the way, A, they will give Schmigadoon, which premiered last year, that wonderful musical series that featured Ariana DeBose, who just won the Oscar, Best Supporting Actress for West Side Story, that they'll give that a second season. And I'm pulling for Coda, which just won the Academy Award for Best Picture and two other Oscars, Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Supporting Actor, that they turn that into a series. And I'll tell you, From what I hear from the people who are in the original cast and movie, they'd love to make it a series, or at least a movie sequel. So come on, Apple TV Plus, Jamie Van Erlich, Zach Van Amberg and Jamie Ehrlich, get going, make that a show. It's going to be great. And I think it'd be a marvelous family drama and a big breakthrough for actors and production talent in the deaf and hard of hearing community. So Apple TV Plus, very much on track to be even more special than it currently is. Takeaway number four, AMC Networks. This past Wednesday night, I was at the Peak at Hudson Yards, marvelous rooftop restaurant at Hudson Yards, the Shops. And that's because AMC Networks, for the first time in several years, was doing a special chroming preview for advertisers and the press. And while it was a very foggy night in New York town, it was a marvelous affair. A lot of AMC celebrities, from Bob Odenkirk to co-stars of The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, were there. And the message, the big message, I like to say in my media those stories on events like this, is that AMC is now getting ready to introduce its next generation of scripted television. And not just for AMC, the mothership of AMC Networks, but also for WeTV, which is going forward with its first original scripted series in a very long time. All Black, All Be Okay, with more scripted series than ever before. And perhaps some other of their services as well. And this new generation is going to be starting on Sunday night with the eagerly anticipated series 61st Street, about the Chicago criminal justice system, with a great cast led by Courtney Vance and recent Oscar nominee for King Richard, Anjanou Ellis, whose career I have watched since The Book of Numbers on BET, a very underrated miniseries from like 10, 15 years ago. AMC Networks really made it clear that they are going to go for not only making new franchises and extending current ones like The Walking Dead, but they want to get into all sorts of territories like the Anne Rice novels. This fall, Interview with the Vampire. Saw some clips from that series, which will premiere this fall. It's very atmospheric. It was made in New Orleans. The cast looks terrific. It, I think, is going to be one of the big, big shows to watch this year. And AMC is so high on their involvement with the Anne Rice novels that they've already got another series coming up next year, Mayfair Witches, and they intend to roll out more series, maybe one or more a year, for the next 5 to 7 years. That's the level of commitment they're making with their Anne Rice deal. And coming up later this year, they've got Dark Winds, a series that was shot in Navajo country with a largely Native American cast and production crew. They've got Pantheon, which is their first ever animated hour series. They've got more Walking Dead events, more Walking Dead franchises, including the summer anthology Tales of the Walking Dead. And they've got more things in the pipeline for late this year and next year. It is really going to be something. AMC Networks, at a time when other linear cable networks are cutting back or have cut back on original scripted series like USA, like Hallmark Channel, Lifetime, and other networks, AMC is going fast forward. And that says something about where they see their future at. And luckily, they have AMC Networks, which is their production unit, which, like A&E Studios and other studios, they want to do more, not only for themselves, but for other services too. So keep your eye on AMC Studios. They have a lot in the pipeline. So, and now we have one more that we want to get into. So Rick Webb, you're still listening to us, give us a call, 646-652-2906, and we'll get you back on the air. My final takeaway of the week nominee is none other than Tiger Woods. What he has done this last day and a half to be on that course as we speak in Augusta, Georgia, one of the top golf championships, 14 months after almost shattering or losing his leg in that horrendous car accident, is beyond miraculous. And he's in the hunt, and he's in contention. As of about 45 minutes ago, he is on the third hole. He is at even par. He did lose a shot, and you never know. Remember, he spent most of the first round at even par, no bogeys, and then he finally had that wonderful birdie from like 20 feet out on the back nine. And there's a good chance that he is going to make the weekend. If he makes the weekend, I tweeted about this earlier today, CBS and Paramount Plus should move heaven and earth with the Augusta National Golf Club to have live Tigers Saturday and Sunday round finish live in some manner. On CBS, on Paramount Plus, on both of them, somewhere else if need be, but get it on, because it is going to be, because millions of people are going to be watching who either have not watched golf in a long time or have never watched golf at all, are going to see what may be this, one of the biggest stories, not only in sports, but in the United States this year. The fact, again, the Tiger is on the course, and he is in contention, is huge. It is becoming more than a golf story, especially if he makes the cut. The cut right now, projected, is a 3-over par, and Tiger is at even. So let's see what happens. Again, if he makes the cut by the end of the day today, and by the way, ESPN will be having live coverage of the Masters till 7:30 tonight, for the conclusion, CBS, Paramount Plus, talk to Augusta National and let us see Tiger Woods, his other two rounds, tomorrow and Sunday, start to finish live, no matter where you may be. It's going to be outstanding television. If it happens, it's outstanding television. I know the Augusta National Golf Club is very, very skimpy on weekend coverage, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern time both times. It's time for them to let it go. It's time for CBS to pull the bull by the horns and say, Augusta, we cannot stand by and not cover this incredible story of Tiger Woods. It will benefit you, and it will benefit millions of fans of television and golf and the sport. So let us have at it. So CBS and Paramount Plus, I hope you're hearing me. Get on the horn with Augusta, particularly if Tiger makes the cut. And let's see Saturday and Sunday, starting tomorrow morning, Tiger in action at Augusta, start to finish, live, every step of the way. So there you have it, my takeaway of the week parade. What do you think? Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or you can use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name is Rick Webb. You're on the phone. Make the call, and we'll put you on shortly. Coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, you're going to be an entrepreneur who is trying to get a lot of new television owned by African-Americans off the ground. And the company is called Urban Edge Networks, and he's already working on getting Grambling University its own television channel. So that's coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Rick Webb is back with us from Philadelphia. So, Rick, what do you think of our takeaway parade?
Well, actually, I'm surprised that you didn't mention anything about Dancing with the Stars. I mean, a lot of people are, I guess, PO'd that Dancing with the Stars is now going to Disney Plus. So a lot of those fans, I guess, for the last, I think it's been on 30 seasons, now have to get subscribed to Disney Plus if they want to continue to watch it. But but nonetheless, I'm also amazed that the show lasted even from the beginning, because I was taking a class actually when the show first started, and there was a big ballroom resurgence at the time because of PBS. And the class I was taking, I think it was at NYU, the teacher was even kind of, she was making fun of the show in a way, saying, you have the best ballroom dancers in the world on PBS. Why are people going to want to watch an amateur dancing competition on primetime? She thought it was the biggest mistake in the world for ABC, but here it's been on 30 years. So I'm just really wondering what your thoughts are, since I know that you're a fan of ballroom dancing.
Absolutely. And I've been a big fan of Dancing with the Stars from the top. We had the original executive producer on this show many years ago, and Alex Radinsky, the original director, I thought did a fantastic job with that series. And that's what really carved his career as the best live director of musicals and dance on television. I'm still, the news just broke about an hour and a half, 2 hours ago. Obviously, ABC was in a pickle. It was like, if we put Dancing with the Stars on this fall, we're going to have to run up against constantly preempting it for simulcast of ESPN Monday Night Football, and also getting an exclusive game, by the way. So I think this had a lot to do with it. I also think the ratings had a lot to do with it. The last season of Dancing with the Stars a year ago, it had 6 million viewers. At its peak, it had 20 million plus. There are a lot of people who also, I think, thought the time was right to depart that network. We'll see what Disney Plus does. I think a lot depends on who comes up as the celebrities this time around, who they have now as a new host. I'd love to see Tom Bergeron back. He is the best at live television around. He made that show work no matter who his partner was, whether it was Samantha Harris or in later years Erin Andrews. I think they have some work to do. And don't forget, remember, Disney Plus later this year goes ad support. So people may pay less for it if they decide to take ads. And with Disney Plus, we'll see. We don't know yet how many ads per hour they're going to do. So jury is out. But, yes, I do sympathize with you. There may be a lot of people who are very upset about the fact that that ABC made this move because it's a shocker. And, by the way, one other thing, too, to people who think that the Oscars got saved this year because of the higher ratings, despite what I thought was one of the worst, was a fiasco on every level, and it was before the Will Smith-Chris Rock flap, this situation proves that the Oscars are not, repeat, not fallible from going the same route or going to Netflix or Hulu or someplace else if the ratings take another downturn.
Interesting. And I value your strong opinions on everything as well. But do you know what? Also, I have kind of from a producing standpoint a question for you that I've always wondered. Like, why – I have my own ideas about this. So why do you think that Dancing with the Stars – like was a hit from the beginning when PBS actually had, again, like the best ballroom dancers in competition in the world on PBS, but yet Dancing with the Stars, you know, massively eclipsed it with basically an amateur dancing show?
A number of factors. First, I think that Tom Bergeron, who I think is just great at live television, was the best host. He really was. He was great with the performers. He was great with the judges. He really made you feel comfortable watching it. That's one. Number two, that it was live. And when you do live television, it really heightens the performance because there's no second takes. There's no do-overs. You got to do it live. Third, I thought that the ballroom routines were very inventive, and they were beautifully captured on camera by Alex Winitsky and his production crew. And fourth, you had those wonderful judges, Bruno, Carrie Ananaba, and Len Goodman. They were great as a team. They were great individually. And I think they also gave you wonderful insight about the dance and, like, what you look for in terms of a good ballroom dancer. And finally, the fact you had these celebrities, many of whom, some of whom came out of television, that you rooted for, like John O'Hurley, like the actress from General Hospital. You were able to root because you saw how they were doing their routines. You went backstage. You went to the ballroom studio. And you saw how they were getting these routines. And the fact that they were fallible in terms of, you know, trying to learn it. People learned that, you know what, it does take – this is not a lark. You really have to practice. Even if you're a dancer, and there have been other – like Stacey, for example, the second season, who had great dance training, you still have to adjust to the ballroom style. You still have to adjust to how you work with a partner in a different kind of way than ballet or modern dance or jazz and so forth. And I think all those elements – plus the spectacle, I think, contributed to why Dancing with the Stars was. And nobody had seen a show like that before when it first came out. Remember, you had not done live programming of this kind in decades and on a weekly series basis. And I think that's why Dancing with the Stars, because it was unique, because of all the other factors I mentioned, was an instant hit.
Cool. And do you know what do you feel about the ability of the show to bring the fans along, like for the viewer to put themselves in, you know, in the mold of the dancers? Because, like, watching the best dancers, you kind of go, I could never do that. But then when you watch amateurs, I felt that it pulled the audience in more to say, maybe I could do that.
Yeah. One thing I think they should do is, in recent years, they've actually cut the routines down from 90 seconds to 2 minutes to 1 minute. And I think that hurts the show because you don't get the opportunity to develop a relationship in a particular dance. 60 seconds goes way too fast. I don't know who made that call, but I thought that was a bad call, that they should have the more you see, the more fleshed out the routine is and the more interesting it is, the better. So I would say one thing they should definitely do is go back to the 90-second, 2-minute routines. You know,
yeah,
let's see more
of
the dance, not less.
Yeah, I agree. And even for the morbid curiosity of 90 seconds, there's more chance of failure towards the end with someone forgetting a routine as well. So maybe that's why they shortened it. But I think that a lot of people watch for the imperfections more than the perfections at times.
Yeah. One other thing, too, is that we were able to see different sides of people who took the dance on, who may have done dance in things like gymnastics or figure skating. So Christy Yamaguchi, like Sean Johnson, the gymnast, people like Stacy, who had done other dance, like ballet and so forth. And to see them mature as dancers and as people by trying ballroom on, I think was also a contributor to how successful the show was. Because, again, the audience really saw what it takes to dance, what it takes to make something happen. And when you have a partnership, and you have it fly, and you develop it over an extended period of time, it's really really special. So again, we'll see what happens. I think these producers have a lot to work on, and we'll see what kind of promotion and what kind of effort Disney Plus makes in getting Dancing with the Stars. Now they have it, and by the way, they have it for two runs, not just one run this fall, but probably another run in 2023.
It'll be interesting, very, very interesting. So, well, thanks, Simon. Thanks. Thank you for your insight, because I always learn a lot watching your listening to your show, rather, and it's a great educational experience for me as well as entertaining. So thank you.
You're very welcome, Rick, and thank you for your contribution too. It's always a pleasure. And keep it up. We love to have you. Have a super weekend.
You too.
Rick, we have our friend from Philadelphia right here on Tomorrow Be Told. Again, thank you to James Hawes from Slow Horse for being with us. Remember, on Monday, Todd Brown, the entrepreneur behind Urban Edge Networks, he will be our lead guest. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com. Check out our podcast, available very soon on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, iRadio Podcast Network, all of our sites. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about today's program? What's your thoughts about our takeaway of the week ideas? And what your thoughts for where TV is at and where it's going. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. However you respond, we respond back within 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. I say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of the program. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the Sonnenberg head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. For details, go to onpodium.com. Guitar Fakus is our web coordinator. Marvin Televised is brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Audible transforms the way you hear the world. Listen to good stuff on a one-month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. For Marvin Televised, I'm Simon Appledown in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. Tiger Woods, keep it up. And we'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, all of our podcast destination. Remember, if you haven't been vaccinated, make sure you see your doctor, go over your medical history, find out all the alternate treatments, and then make a choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.